In March 2011, Micah White, editor of the Canadian magazine Adbusters, asked me to write a column on the possibility of a revolutionary movement springing up in Europe or America. At the time, the best I could think to say is that when a true revolutionary movement does arise, everyone, the organizers included, is taken by surprise. I had recently had a long conversation with an Egyptian anarchist named Dina Makramebeid to that effect, at the height of the uprising at Tahrir Square, which I used to open the column. "The funny thing is," my Egyptian friend told me, "you've been doing this so long you kind of forget that you can win. All these years we've been organizing marches, rallies, and if only 45 people show up, you're depressed. If you get 300, you're happy. Then one day you get 500,000, and you're incredulous. On some level, you'd given up thinking that could even happen." Hosni Mubarak's Egypt was one of the most repressive societies on earth. The entire apparatus of the state was organized around ensuring that what ended up happening could never happen. And yet it did. So, why not here? To be honest, most activists I know go around feeling much like my Egyptian friend used to feel. We organize much of our lives around the possibility of something that we're not sure we believe could ever really happen. And then it did. Of course, in our case, it wasn't the fall of a military dictatorship, but the outbreak of a mass movement based on direct democracy, an outcome in its own way just as long dreamed of by its organizers, just as long dreaded by those who held ultimate power in the country, and just as uncertain in its outcome as the overthrow of Mubarak had been. The story of this movement has been told in countless outlets already, from the Occupy Wall Street Journal to the actual Wall Street Journal, with varying motives, points of view, casts of characters, and degrees of accuracy. In most, my own importance has been vastly overstated. My role was that of a bridge between camps. But my aim in this chapter is not so much to set the historical record straight, or even to write a history at all, but rather to give a sense of what living at the fulcrum of such a historical convergence can be like. Much of our political culture, even daily existence, makes us feel that such events are simply impossible. Indeed, there is reason to believe that our political culture is designed to make us feel that way. The result has a chilling effect on the imagination. Even those who, like Dino or myself, organized much of our lives and most of our fantasies and aspirations around the possibility of such outbreaks of the imagination, were startled when such an outbreak actually began to happen. Which is why it's crucial to begin by underlining that transformative outbreaks of imagination have happened, they are happening, they surely will continue to happen again. The experience of those who live through such events is to find our horizons thrown open, to find ourselves wondering what else we assume cannot really happen actually can. Such events cause us to reconsider everything we thought we knew about the past. This is why those in power do their best to bottle them up, to treat these outbreaks of imagination as peculiar anomalies, rather than the kind of moments from which everything, including their own power, originally emerged. So, telling the story of Occupy, even if from just one actor's point of view, is important. It's only in the light of the sense of possibility Occupy opened up that everything else I have to say makes sense.